So let's talk about Al Franken. We've got a number of individuals who have been accused of sexual harassment, sexual assault. They've, in a number of instances, suffered serious professional, at least career consequences, if not legal consequences. And for the most part, it seems to me that people have approved of the fact that they have suffered those consequences. With Al Franken, though, this survey suggests that voters in Minnesota seem to be, a lot of them seem to be fine with him. I can't imagine these numbers are a whole lot different from what they would have been before these allegations came out.
Yeah, Franken's still very popular. We find that he has a 53% approval rating, 42% of voters disapprove of the job he's doing. It's a lot better than we find for the average senator, and it's pretty consistent with where we found him over time. And one thing that's particularly interesting is that where his approval is really coming from is women. With them, 57% approve of him, 37% don't. And we asked people, do you think he should resign or not? Only 42% think he should go through with his planned resignation, 50% don't think he should resign. So kind of interesting finding, because we had also polled on this on a national basis, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago, and voters on a national level agreed with his decision to resign, but at the state level, there's a lot more feeling that maybe Franken got a raw deal.
Do we know how much, if any, that's changed those numbers since the allegations first came out? I shouldn't even say the allegations. They're photographic evidence of what he did.
Yeah, this is the only thing we've done in Minnesota, but there was also a Survey USA poll a month ago that actually showed his numbers a little lower. And I think one thing that might be happening here is I think voters may feel like, you know, Franken has taken responsibility for what he did in a way that most of these other people haven't taken responsibility. And I think that he may be getting some credit for that. I also think you see Democrats really rallying around him because there's a feeling that all these Republicans have done stuff that's so much worse than what Al Franken's been accused of, and they're not having to resign immediately. In some cases, like the president, they're not really facing any consequences at all. And I think that people are sort of saying, well, if Trump's not going, if Blake Farenthold's not going, if these other Republicans aren't going, then why should Franken be going anywhere? Why should he be held to a different standard than everybody else when the stuff he was accused of doing wasn't as serious as maybe some of these other people? So definitely, I think, see those sorts of things, and also just a sentiment that this should have been more up to voters in Minnesota, and there should have maybe been less pressure from other senators on Franken to resign.
When the election was taking place in Alabama, and in spite of the allegations against Roy Moore, on top of all of the other criticisms that could be leveled against Roy Moore, but the allegations came out, and they moved the dial quite a bit initially, and then it looked like those numbers were kind of bouncing back in his direction, and we knew heading into the election, not necessarily which way it was going to go, but that it was going to be close. And people were surprised by that, considering the nature of the allegations and the extent of them and how many people had come forward and what they were saying Moore had done. And in the midst of all of that, I saw an analysis, and this is one of those where I see it, I notice it, I think it's insightful, and then I forget to note where it came from, so now I can't remember where it was anymore. But it was an interesting point, and this goes back to scandals past as well and how they affect election turnout. And this analysis suggested that a really serious scandal along the lines of a Roy Moore might affect the vote up to maybe like a 10% swing, but that would be the maximum. Even if it's a just like a national headline-making scandal, it's not going to move the dial in terms of an election more than 10% one way or the other. And this case with Franken seems to be another example of that, where regardless of what the nature of the scandal is or the allegations or whatever misconduct or impropriety or illegal activity or anything else a politician gets accused of, their supporters, for the most part, are going to wind up rallying around them and making their excuses for doing so, and their opponents are going to use that as another excuse to vote the same way they were going to have voted in the first place. Is that Is that partly your impression here too, or is this more a question of the difference between Franken's behavior and Trump's, or the way that he's responded to it versus others?
Well, I think certainly, as you sort of alluded to, it is reflective partisanship more than anything else. We see Democrats saying Franken should stay, Republicans saying Franken should go, independent side with Franken should stay, and that gets the overall numbers to Franken should stay. But you still don't see a whole lot of bleeding across party lines. There's some Republicans who say Franken should stay, some Democrats who say Franken should go. But to some extent, what we're seeing here is sort of the natural partisanship of the state. Minnesota's a state that leads Democratic, and these numbers sort of reflect that in a situation where people are sort of seeing this as a partisan issue. So I think one thing for Democrats that's made the Franken issue different from other stuff is, for instance, the initial accuser does go on Sean Hannity all the time and that sort of thing. Roger Stone was sort of suggesting that he might have had something to do with the allegations coming forward. So that sort of turns it in, I think, to more of a straight-up partisan issue than it maybe would otherwise be.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling. PublicPolicyPolling.com is their website if you want to get more on these numbers and others. Let's turn to a series of polls that you've conducted just in the last couple of months, sort of turning our attention to 2018 and sort of the shakeup of or the state of the race between Democrats and Republicans heading into the midterm elections. You've surveyed in various polls and for various companies 36 GOP held congressional districts just in the last couple of months, and we're talking already about the possibility of kind of a wave midterm in 2018 going in favor of the Democrats. What are the numbers from these 36 Republican-held districts suggest about the possibility of big Democratic gains in November?
Well, they certainly suggest that there is a possibility of very significant Democratic gains. We've talked a lot in our conversations over the course of this year about what the national generic ballot polling is saying. And sort of in the national picture, when you ask people, are you going to vote Democratic or Republican for Congress next year, Democrats are coming out ahead on that by an average of 12 or 13 points. But people often say, well, you know, that's sort of nice generically, but what's happening in the specific districts? And as you said, we've polled 36 Republican-held districts since October. Democrats are winning in already 25 out of those 36 districts. And of course, we haven't polled all the Republican-held congressional districts, so there's probably other ones where Democrats are winning as well. But to have this far out, more than two dozen Republican-held districts where Democrats have an advantage definitely does speak to the potential for big gains next year. One thing we should note is that most of these districts, we tested a generic Democrat against the Republican incumbent, and that is going to be one of the big things we'll have to look out for in 2018 is, are the actual generic candidates for the Democrats, do they end up being as strong as these sort of generic candidates are? Sometimes generic candidate is stronger than who you actually end up with. But at least theoretically, people in a whole lot of these districts are open to voting Democratic next year. And, you know, 25 out of 36, the Democrat leads. The other 11 districts were either tied or the Republicans were up by single digits. So there hasn't been a single one out of this bunch of three dozen districts we've polled where Republicans have had a real solid advantage. It's either the Democrats are ahead or it's close. So I think definitely this district level polling sort of backs up that national generic ballot polling that's speaking to a strong potential for Democrats to get control of the House back next year.
Those 36 districts you polled, I know they're from various states across the country and it's nationwide. What was it about those 36 that led you to survey them? Are they particularly swingy districts, or what's the unifying factor there?
It's generally districts that one of the major rating services like Charlie Cook or Larry Sabato either have rated as a toss-up. So for the most part, we were sort of going off those lists to pull the most competitive districts. And one thing that means is that none of these were from North Carolina, because the few Republican-held districts in North Carolina that are seen as being potentially competitive are kind of in that next tier of seats. So it'll be interesting if we do any polling early next year in Robert Pittenger's district or Ted Budd's district or George Holding's district in North Carolina to see how much of an opportunity Democrats might have in some of those places. Those were districts that were drawn never to be competitive, but that's one thing that happens in a wave election like it very much seems like we might be in for, where districts that aren't supposed to be competitive end up being competitive. And I bet we will end up having at least one House race in North Carolina that genuinely could go one way or the other based on this climate that we're in.
So these numbers are really good for Democrats, and we've talked about sort of the generic Democratic versus Republican House ballot across the country showing Democrats up by double digits in some cases, or at least the high single digits, and that bodes well for Democrats too. We're still 11 months out, or a little bit more than 10 months out from the actual election, and I remember seeing numbers from previous midterms like 2010, 2014, 2006, where the initial surveys, those generic ballots, favored the Republicans in 2010 and 2014 and the Democrats in 2006. And then that gap actually widened as we got closer and closer to the actual election. Is that something that we might see in 2018? Is that the historical trend? Or what do we know about what could we expect to see in the next 10 months as we get closer and closer to the midterm?
Well, I think what always happens in elections like this is whichever party has the momentum ends up winning in some places that weren't even on the radar screen. So I think that'll be something really interesting to watch for over the course of the year, is what sorts of districts or even states for the U.S. Senate end up being opportunities for Democrats that aren't even on the table right now, because the climate just ends up being so positive in their direction that that it just sort of brings things into the picture that you would have never expected. One thing that's been interesting this month, it was generally viewed that the only places Democrats could possibly pick up Senate seats next year were Arizona and Nevada. Of course, they won this Alabama seat this month, and early polling in Tennessee is finding that the former Democratic governor of Tennessee, Phil Bredesen, is leading in the open Senate seat to replace Bob Corker there. So then all of a sudden you have Tennessee and Alabama on the table for Democrats, which nobody was expecting. Then Mississippi, a state very demographically similar to Alabama, you have the possibility of the Republican incumbent senator being challenged from the far right, just like happened in Alabama. And then Democrats are, you know, making sure they get in place a serviceable candidate just in case. And I think there's going to be a lot of places where Democrats maybe get a higher caliber of candidate than they usually would, somewhere they're not necessarily expecting to win. But if circumstances go in such a way, they're going to make sure they have a good candidate there just in case. And that certainly worked out for Democrats with Doug Jones in Alabama. And I think there'll be some other races that sort of fit that general description here over the next 10 and a half months.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling. So let's talk about where Democrats stand. We talk a lot about what Trump voters think. How about people who cast their ballots for Hillary Clinton in 2016? Where do they stand on the big issues?
We find that among Clinton voters, only 4% support the GOP tax plan, 82% are opposed to it. We've talked a lot about how Trump voters don't take the Russia issue very seriously, but among Clinton voters, who of course actually won the popular vote, 86% think that Trump's campaign colluded with Russia to help him win, 90% think that if collusion is proven that he should resign. We talk a lot, obviously, about how unpopular Trump is, but it's also worth noting that with Clinton voters, Paul Ryan has an 8% approval rating, 79% disapproval. Mitch McConnell has a 6% approval rating, 77% disapproval. So just across the board, Clinton voters sort of think what you would expect them to think, but it's a group that's really, for the most part, been ignored by the media because there's been so much more obsession with going to talk to Trump voters. And I think the most famous example in that genre in the last week was the Washington Post went to some city in Tennessee and said, the city that voted for Trump that never stopped saying Merry Christmas. And of course, the whole country never stopped saying Merry Christmas is the reality of it, but that's obviously an issue that's sort of been made up and politicized to the hilt.
Again, speaking with Tom Jensen. And Tom, before we let you go, we didn't get a chance to talk last week, but you put out a Christmas-related survey or a holiday-related survey, depending on how imbued you are with the war on Christmas. But I want to talk about one particular number that stood out. I was looking at the numbers earlier today. There has been in the last 5 years, and I'm wondering if you could shed some light on this, a shocking decline in the number of Americans who say they believe in Santa Claus. What's that about?
Well, in 2012, right after Obama got reelected, we asked people, do you believe in Santa Claus? And 52% of voters in the country said yes, only 45% said no. Now we've dropped all the way to only 22% of voters say they believe in Santa Claus, 69% say they don't. It's actually pretty unusual for us to see a 54-point net shift in 5 years on an issue like that. And I think it just speaks to the fact that this unusual political climate we've been in now basically for 2.5 years is sort of just destroying people's souls. So it'll be interesting in a few years when presumably the needle has shifted back in the other direction to see if we also get more positive about Santa Claus and Christmas again, or if we've just been permanently ingrained with this cynicism after having to go through the Trump era.
I looked at that number earlier today and I said, when historians finally start to write the book about the decline and fall of the American empire, that's the number that they're going to point to as being like the signal that horrible things were about to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of the most symbolically important. I mean, even though it's a silly thing to ask about, I think in some ways it's one of the more telling and symbolically important things we found in a poll all year.
All right. Well, publicpolicypolling.com is the website. Everyone listening out there, go there and find out more, because a lot of numbers that we didn't get to, including on that Christmas poll, a lot of really interesting numbers to look at there, too. Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.